When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good friend, Kyle Schoenewill. Kyle, how are you doing on this fabulous What If Wednesday?
My neck is absolutely killing me right now. Just throbbing. I feel like I've been bit by a zombie. I don't know. Something's not right. It's terrible.
Temperature's heading in the wrong direction.
That's what I'm afraid of, to be honest.
It's funny. Candace is already, she's having some neck issues this week, and I've been having some lower back issues, and we're like, geez, did we just immediately get old?
Our collective friends from work bodies are falling apart. I realize for me that everything I do in life requires me to sit, basically. When I work at golf behind a TV truck, when I work at my studio, when I play video games, when I travel on a plane, and I think I'm just killing myself slowly by never standing. So here I am, by the way. I am recording this episode standing in my studio. So it's probably a new tradition I'm going to start. Yeah, I need to keep it going. but also, can I add something else on a totally different note? Yes, my neck hurts like the Dickens, but guess what? It's officially the best time of the year. Let's go. Yes, dude. Are you kidding me? This gets me so excited. Oh, fall Kyle is like peak Kyle. Let me just explain why fall, and specifically the month of October when we get there, trumps all their months and seasons. I'm driving home from my, what?
I know you're a big PSL guy.
I'm driving home from my last golf tournament for a while, so no work there. It's cooler weather. It's sunny in Nashville. I get to golf. I get to play video games. I get to see my family. And most importantly, football is back. Now, I'll say, we're recording this pre the first Vikings game, so I might actually be depressed by the time you're hearing this. But right now, I'm pumped. But yeah, it's just like outside cookouts, fires outside, football. I sometimes take football outside because it's so nice outside. Sitting on your porch, golfing, not sweating. It's just king. Plus, it's my birthday in October, so let's go.
Man. Oh, that's true. Yeah, see, my birthday is November, so I also have a lot of, I'm with you. I'm a big fall fan. Especially for me, it's always been the later part of fall, in part because of my birthday, but in part because I've always lived pretty far south, and so fall doesn't seem to really arrive here until later.
Yeah, true.
And which is even now, I feel like you're getting probably a bit more of that than I am down here in beautiful but sweltering Austin, Texas.
And you've actually said that's one of your least favorite things about Texas, right? Is that you don't get the full fall season, really. You don't get a true, like, trees turning colors, cooler winds blowing in type fall.
Especially this part. I mean, I, East Texas, you definitely do. But I would definitely take Austin over East Texas in every other way. And I feel like I can say that because I've spent a lot of time there as well. But yeah, I'm a big, I do miss. That's one thing that Tennessee just has in spades is just a lot of kind of
green.
Beautiful. Yeah, a lot of beautiful green that then turns into a lot of beautiful fall colors. But man, I used to play a lot up in the kind of Chattanooga area for whatever reason. And that drive from Nashville to Chattanooga in the fall is just...
We're back to talking about Robbie's music career somehow. I love it. hey, by the way, just got to throw this in there too for all of our Michigan listeners out there. Michigan fall trumps Tennessee fall. And that's from somebody who loves Tennessee.
I believe that.
So if anyone's out there and they're from Michigan, they know what I'm talking about. Now, the season is really short. Like, you got to enjoy fall. By November, it's winter, basically. So it's shorter.
Yeah.
But the first part of it, like after Labor Day till November, talk about colors, talk about cooler weather. Let's go.
And while we're talking about fall, I do want to say, I told you this, we are very excited because I have some time off here over the next month, and we're making a trip up to Maine for the first time.
Yes.
And it just so happens we're getting to go there, I think, in what is normally considered to be the kind of peak fall time in Maine, which is that first week in October.
Yes.
So if we have any listeners out there, if you have any Portland, Maine area recommendations, if you're around, hit me up. Candace and I will be up there. I think we're going to get to meet our manager, Pete, while we're there, which is always fun whenever Pete can be around. So a lot of exciting fall stuff
See,
coming at us.
That's what's funny. If we were doing a fall rankings now, Northeast takes the cake. So it'd be Northeast, then Michigan, then Tennessee, then Texas, based on our current things we're talking about. So yeah, you just trumped me by saying you're going to the Northeast for the fall. Like, people travel to the Northeast for the fall just to see the colors. I don't even think Michigan has colors like that, in my opinion. Also on the state front, just because I'm really passionate about states, and I, as I've mentioned before, that I've ranked them. what you just said is so fun because, you know, I travel a decent amount for work. And dude, our Friends From Work community has come in so clutch for me multiple times, Rob. And you'll find that. So like you just said, hey, is anyone in the Maine area for recommendations? I did that for Atlanta. And yeah, if you put it on Slack and say, hey, I'm going to be in Atlanta, I got a bunch of responses for restaurants and they were bangers.
Oh, nice.
Absolute bangers in Atlanta. My wife and I really enjoyed it. So serious, legitimate shout out to our Friends From Work community. So I'll let you guys know whenever we're recording from somewhere else. Because that's how this came up originally, by the way. Whenever I say, hey, I'm in Greensboro or something, then all of our North Carolina people chimed in. It's fun.
Man. Yeah, I think that's just a great time to shout out to our Slack community and our community in general. We talk a lot about the ideas and the things that come up on the Slack, but it's been so fun just getting to know some of our listeners better, and the folks that hang in there are such good people and fun people to talk to. And it's been such a, it's injected a surprising amount of joy into my life. So I'm very, if you're listening and you're one of those folks that either hangs out in the Slack or on any of our social media platforms, thank you. Because we see that stuff, we really appreciate it. And it does make all this so much more fun.
I was going to make sure you included that, Rob, because we do have a lot of fun in the Slack, but we still have an incredible Instagram community and Facebook and Twitter community.
Oh, for sure.
And
for
we get messages through our Squarespace website, and that's been fun. So it's not just there. Yeah. We love it. We love it all. We love all of you. And now this episode has turned from so fun and so fall and light and lighthearted to zombies eating brains out.
Zombie.
So you know who probably doesn't build a Squarespace website are zombies, right? I mean, that's maybe why they became zombies. Maybe they weren't aware of the vast knowledge they could get on a Squarespace website, and that's what happened.
That's true. They didn't know the opportunities available to them, you know, if they were just to set up their own platform, you know, their e-commerce options. They had to resort to zombieism because they just didn't know that they really had any other options.
No doubt.
And that's not true. Because they have Squarespace. Listen,
wow.
Kyle, Squarespace, the suite of products combine award-winning design world-class engineering, making it easier than ever to establish and own your online presence. From their beautiful templates to their powerful e-commerce tools, they help customers launch their ideas into the world and build their brand. Squarespace tools are very DIY in nature, meaning anyone, we've talked about this before, we can do it, you can definitely do it, maybe even zombies can do it, can learn about, use, and or create the following without any technical expertise. So here are just a few of the things that you can find through Squarespace. You have an all-in-one platform. Like we said, you have e-commerce capabilities. You can get a domain name. There are marketing tools. There are analytics. There is world-class design. And again, all of this is crazy, crazy easy to use.
And that's where I want to jump in, because we have told you guys about Squarespace now for lots of weeks. And we've mainly talked about the tools and everything Robbie just said. But I want to add a little personal note, because I am not a website designer. I do not know anything about that side of things. And yet, I have been able to manage and run our website, and I love it. Like just yesterday, on this note, Robbie, by the way, I finally updated our website to include all of our interview videos. So instead of going to YouTube, you can go to the ffwpodcast.com and watch our interviews there. But putting that together was easy for me to do, and that's from someone who doesn't know how to do that stuff. So I have very much enjoyed working with their platform. Their templates are great. And I think if you're starting a business or you need a website, Squarespace is the way to do it. And Robbie and I at Friends From Work are going to be updating ours even more in the coming months. We have some big ideas that we're working on. And our website, our Squarespace website, is going to be foundational to those things. So if you're interested, head over to squarespace.com/friendsfromwork for a free trial. And if you like it, which you will, you can use the offer code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Head to squarespace.com. Okay, Robbie, this What If episode was wild. Wild. I think I'm jazzed up, by the way, because I'm standing up. So like everything, if people can see me right now, I'm so animated with everything. My hands are going everywhere. Like
it works. That's the way to, I'm a big standing desk guy. Whenever I write things, I stand up. When I'm on calls, I normally stand up. You know, it's just, it gives you that energy. Not that the last thing I think anyone thinks that Kyle needs is more energy, more but energy, here we go. Yeah.
Maybe you should be standing and I should be sitting with like, right. You know, like sure. Bongo music in the background, like just chilling out a little bit.
This episode is the one that I think I've been, if not the most looking forward to, the most intrigued by, in part because there was a clear Marvel Comics analog here, and that was sort of one of the only ones that you know, when we talked to AC, she talked about, and they talked about some of the press conference, but also just because, you know, we've talked about wanting to see the darker side of some of these characters and some of these stories, and I had no idea how dark last week's episode would be, but this one very much kind of continues that trend into some bleak territory here, and I'm here for it.
Okay, so before we go through it all, can we just check in with What If? We're at the midpoint here. This is episode 5 of 9, I think. And how are we feeling? What's your big takeaways, Robbie?
I mean, I've seen a lot of discussion about this on the Slack, which always makes me happy that people are engaging with it. I think there are a lot of questions around the big picture stuff here. I've seen some people trying to tie this more directly to Loki and figure out like some of the stuff we talked about early on in terms of, is Captain Carter going to show up not just in this show again, which we know she will, but also in the MCU, and what will be the ties, and is Doctor Strange going to carry over? And I think that's what's interesting about this show, is that when it was first announced, I don't think anyone thought we would be asking those questions as much. Like, I think it was really clearly established, like what I've said in the comics, for the longest time, you had a What If comic. It was just a little, it was a fun opportunity for a writer to reimagine key moments. And then it was always sort of a full arc in one issue. It was put to bed and it was on the shelf, and that was kind of it. Now, I will say in recent years, certain writers have mined those stories to create stories that show up in the main Marvel Comics universe, or, you know, they've revisited those in subsequent What If type one-off issues. So I think that it was very fair of us to expect that from this show.
But then we heard from the makers of the show that it's so canon, it's so canon, it's so canon. And then I think that influenced people's opinion to think that it's maybe not as standalone as we thought first. And now I'm kind of back to it is more standalone. Does that make sense? I've kind of swung.
Right. Right, right. I mean, I do think what's interesting, this episode, as we'll talk about in a second, very much ends on, I mean, if not a cliffhanger, it doesn't resolve the issues that have been posed by this episode. And that is really the same in some ways for all of these, with maybe the exception, well, no, because I was going to say the exception of the Star-Lord T'Challa episode, but no, that ends with the Peter Quill scene. And so even though you feel like you get some resolution on his story and them coming back to Wakanda, I feel like everyone has wound up with, okay, well, it's very much giving us an opportunity to follow up with those. And so I think the big question for me is, to what degree is that going to look like season two mirroring season one? Like, okay, now, you know, episode one of season two is picking up with Captain Carter and on and on. And how much of it is building towards some kind of Avengers style coming together of some of these characters? Like, are we going to wind up in a situation where Captain Carter and Doctor Strange are interacting, for instance?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think
I don't
so?
Think so. Well, I think we need to define the word canon, because I think that's throwing people off. In my opinion, after five episodes and now seeing how clearly different each one is, it's this show only exists because of the multiverse being open. There's no other way this show exists. It's canon in the fact that because the multiverse is now open, we are looking at one reality for an episode, and here's what happened with this decision. Then we go to a different one. Then we go to a different one. As long as the theory of the multiverse exists in the MCU, they could do an infinite amount of these episodes. Where my question comes is, if my theory about the greater MCU having the multiverse closing at some point is true, then this show would have to stop existing when that happens. And therefore, if there's a season two, that rubs with my theory, because that either means I'm wrong on that or Doctor Strange is not going to close it. Well, but I just don't think it's canon in that I don't think we'll see those characters other than maybe in a multiverse live action MCU film. There's like a funny shout out to the, like, in this universe, there was a Captain Carter. Like, just let me paint a random picture. Like, what if in Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, that parallel reality, in that universe, there's a Captain Carter there? We never saw her on screen, right? But now we could. And there's like a shout out there. That's the extent I think it's going to tie in, but I don't think they're going to have impact on the greater MCU main timeline that we know. And I don't think they're going to have greater impact on themselves in this season.
Well, so no, I think I agree with you there, but I do think someone highlighted a still from one of the first promos that seems to show Captain Carter with some version of Doctor Strange.
So why do you think they would just choose those two characters? Like, because in the zombie reality, for example, how do they tie any of those back in? Do you think we're going to come back to zombies?
I mean, we could, because, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Like, in Marvel Comics, there is, like I said, a Marvel Zombies sort of miniseries that spun out of a Mark Miller Ultimate Fantastic Four three-issue arc, where it was popular enough that they then kind of made it its own little mini pocket universe, and then they revisited that. It was actually Robert Kirkman, who famously created The Walking Dead, wrote this series for Marvel, which is fitting. I think what's funny is he continued to revisit that, and they kept kind of delving further into the story, and it goes into some wild places beyond even just kind of zombie stuff, like into some cosmic implications, and it winds up being really fun, because again, like with the What If show, you can do that. You can swing big, you can do whatever you want, you can kill off whoever you want, because they're not worried about the implications on the main timeline. The reason I say all that is I could totally imagine them doing that with any one of these stories or not.
Let me ask you a really basic question then. Do you think zombie Wanda will ever interact with non-zombie Wanda? Because if not, then you're saying, like, we're basically arguing, do these worlds ever collide? And I'm thinking the answer is going to be no. But you're saying there's a chance that the answer is yes.
I'm saying there's a chance. I think only because there is a storyline, like we're a little over halfway. We know that there's a second season coming. And while we didn't really get any updates this week, last week's episode saw a big step forward in terms of the Watchers' interaction. And I do feel like that's moving towards something. Like, I feel like it's moving towards, at some point, him feeling the need to interfere for some reason, or in some way, him getting caught up in the middle of something, which has happened in the comics.
Now, the Watcher's the only one that I might agree with that sentiment. Like, maybe he's the one person that's different because he can obviously see all these realities, right? He sees all of them. So he would maybe be the one that would interact with one episode or one reality, but I don't think he's going to interact and bring them all together. I guess, or maybe him interacting does bring them together, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's the variable. I'm with you. I think ultimately, not only do I not, I mean, I don't need that personally. I'm not asking for a kind of ensemble film of our favorite people from each What If episode. I wonder if they're going to give us any of that. Specifically, right. I wonder that because of that Doctor Strange episode where I think
he talked that. To him.
Yeah, I mean, he talked to him. He's kind of stuck there in that, I guess, like trapped in the last sort of dying gasp of that universe. So, like, I don't know. I think that there are parts of me that wonder if some of those folks, by being revisited, are going to necessitate some form of greater interaction. But I think, to me, to answer your question about Wanda, I don't think so, unless, like we've said before, we were to one day get some kind of Secret Wars thing where we're getting a lot of, you know, like for instance, in the Secret Wars comic, they kind of made it what you get is, because it's the sort of puzzle piecing together of a lot of different realities. It's like an Earth that's divided into, like, almost each continent is sort of a reality of its own that's been formed into one physical presence. And so there are all these things from all these different Marvel eras that are mashed up together. And one of them is the Marvel Zombies, sort of, in that you have this kind of Game of Thrones style, like walking, like White Walker sort of a thing, where the Marvel Zombies are all marching towards this other territory, and they've erected this whole wall, and there's a force that's basically set in place just to prevent them from ever breaking through. So, like, I say all that to say, like, if we were ever to have that movie, and I feel like we should say at this point that there were rumors this week, I don't know if you saw this, that the Russo brothers were developing something or in talks with Disney to develop a new Marvel film, and that those negotiations ceased in light of the Scarlett Johansson litigation.
No, they paused.
Well, paused. I mean, they are not currently ongoing, but I don't think they've been totally set aside. But I think
I don't think the takeaway, though, is that they're totally ruling that out. I don't think. I wonder if Shang-Chi being so successful would change Disney's mind, and then therefore their mind, maybe, too.
Right. No, I didn't mean to imply that the Russos are just walking away forever. I do think it's interesting that story leaked at all, because that feels uncharacteristic of Marvel for something that big to come out in that way. But I think, you know, since they left, as they were kind of heading out post-Endgame, the Russos famously said that if they were to come back, they would want to come back for a Secret Wars type film, which, you know, could mean a lot of things.
I guess to summarize my thoughts on the canonness and the worlds colliding-ness of this specific show, for me, going into What If, when I watched ads and commercials and stuff for it, I was never that excited for the show because I was like, I don't need extra side stories. And I felt like a lot of our listeners were actually super pumped by it. Like, you posted a thing on Instagram, remember? And it like blew up. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this show. And I just didn't feel like it was going to translate to the casual viewer very well and all that stuff. What's funny is, now that we're 5 episodes in, I'm finding myself enjoying it a lot more than I thought I was going to, because it's been these standalone side stories where you can have those big swings and those consequences. And it's just kind of a fun, hey, here's what could have happened. And I'm enjoying that more. I told you that last episode. I think because the show is not having to carry the weight of those kind of MCU ramifications, I'm into it more. And that's the very thing that I think is turning off some people. So it's kind of funny. I've gone a full 180 on it a little bit, and other people are going a 180 on it, but the other way. But I think that influences my prediction because I'm enjoying it for what it is. I kind of don't want it to necessarily start colliding. I'm okay with the rest of the MCU going into this, but I just don't need, you know, a zombie animated series colliding with Loki, for example.
No.
So I think that's why it's influencing my opinion on it, probably.
No, I think that's fair. And I don't necessarily, I think that however they do it is going to be tasteful. And I think that they know there are probably a lot of people not watching this that will watch movies and maybe not, you know, I don't think that they would bake in too much, like, I don't think they would want to make this essential viewing necessarily.
That's my last thought as we check in at the midpoint, is that some of the questions I had on whether this show could become essential viewing or bring in some of those casual MCU fans, and you guys all know what I'm talking about, right? Like, on our Slack, I noticed multiple people said that they love this show, but their wives or their husbands having a hard time getting into it. And I told you, like, same thing with me and my dad, for example. At this point, our listeners know about my dad's journey in the MCU. But same thing, like, he's not watching this show right now. He watched everything else, but he's not watching this show. I think more than we've ever had before, this is truly a side story that is not essential viewing, and isn't going to bring in the casual fan as much. But as long as you accept that, I don't think that means it's necessarily even a bad thing. I'm enjoying it for being bonus content. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, like, it's not trying to bring in people like WandaVision did.
Right. Well, and what I'll say that I think we've talked sometimes about how, you know, certain shows can feel kind of side mission-y. And I think, to me, part of the issue there is I'm always trying to figure out why I should care about this thing that feels so much like a one-off story. And I thought that that might be the issue here, but I think what I've found is really fun, especially in last week's episode, is like what we talked about. You still get to enjoy, you feel invested because of the years and, you know, in some of the case of these characters, many movies that have preceded the point in time that we're stepping into. So you still feel some level of, like, MCU prime connection with them.
Right.
So that then whenever they go forward and you see a character that you care about die, like Happy in this week's episode, you still feel that because it's not like this character that you were just introduced to 10 minutes ago. It's still, you know, Happy Hogan. It's just we're seeing in this universe, this is what becomes of Happy Hogan.
You are so right, and that's the best point you've ever made. You said that last week, and I processed that this week. You're so right, because, like, when Lost introduced Nikki and Paolo and everyone hated it. And if you're a Lost fan, you know what I'm talking about. That's because we were already invested in the main Lost characters. Then they tried to go back and say, oh, and by the way, here were these new characters that were here all along. It totally didn't work. But you're right. These are standalone side stories that don't have greater MCU consequences. But that's the kicker. Because you already have preconceived notions and feelings towards these characters, they already have that background development done a little bit.
Right.
So, like, when Vision showed up today, I was like, holy crap, yes, Vision.
Yeah.
And if it was just a random character, I never would have felt that way. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you're right. You're so smart about that. Ugh, you're so smart, Robbie.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, so we're about to dive into this linearly here. I feel like this episode works really well. Just kind of go through it. Boom, boom, boom. Because I had some good notes. But I wanted to get one last word out there for people to be a part of our Panda Express gift card giveaway. As a reminder, if you go to Panda Express and you take a picture of yourself eating the crispy almond chicken breast, tag at the FFW podcast and at official Panda Express, use the hashtag crunch time. You can be entered to win. Yes, you can be entered to win a $20 gift card from us to you to go to Panda Express. So get your entries in. Let's see your Panda Express pictures and get that in. Because one of the greatest things about Panda Express, you know I love it, is that there's something for everyone, from indulgent comfort foods like orange chicken, let's go, to the Walk Smart dishes, which are bold in flavor, but with at least 8 grams of protein and 300 calories or less. And I need to speak to this personally. This is what I need to speak to. Because I feel like people are forgetting that Panda Express has incredibly fresh vegetables. And that's not actually very easy to find, especially not if you're in a hurry, right? Did you know that
Panda Express? Yeah, we're on the road.
Yeah, right. That's why I think I love it too with my travel, because I know I can go in and get some veggies still and they're going to taste fresh. Did you know that Panda hand cuts all of their veggies, Robbie, in their entrees daily? If you go there, you'll see these display cases of veggies, and those are real vegetables, not just for the display. It's easy to get your veggies intake at Panda Express.
I didn't know that. And right now, if you order a family meal through PandaExpress.com or through the Panda Express app, you get free delivery. That is $0 for delivery of delicious Panda Express right to your mouth. Come on, guys. You can go get you some orange chicken. I am a huge orange chicken fan myself. I know, Kyle, that goes for you as well. But there's all kinds of other stuff that you can get for you and your family. I know a lot of people are still hanging at home these days just to be super safe. And so this is a great way to get some good food to you for free.
Yep. One of our listeners, Tolbin, tried the crispy almond chicken breast. He said he loved it. Try that. I'm a big fan of the egg rolls, the veggie spring rolls, the sweet and sour sauce. I'm a big fan of the cream cheese rangoons. Trust me, I'm an expert. The chow mein's incredible. As Robbie said, enjoy $0 delivery when you order a family meal through PandaExpress.com and get your Panda Express gift card sweepstakes entries in, and we'll choose a winner next week.
All right, Kyle, without further ado, episode 5 of What If, entitled What If Zombies? This episode is directed, as always, by Brian Andrews. It was written by Matthew Chauncey, who has written or co-written several episodes so far. As always, Jeffrey Wright is appearing here as the Watcher. We also have a lot of folks either returning from prior What If episodes or from prior MCU films, as well as some new voice actors showing up. We have Paul Bettany here as Vision. We have David Dasmalchian as Kurt, which I love because that's one of my favorite parts of the Ant-Man movies. We have Jon Favreau as Happy Hogan. Evangeline Lilly showing up for Hope Van Dyne. Paul Rudd as Scott Lang. Paul Rudd did a fantastic job here. Emily Van Camp as Sharon Carter. And we also had the debut of Hudson Thames as Peter Parker. And he did an incredible Tom Holland. So props to him.
He did.
I think that is about everyone that showed up that had a major presence here, but I might be missing someone.
It was really fun that they had almost the entire cast was the actual voice actor, first of all.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome. And then secondly, yeah, the one person, I think, as you said, off the top of my head, that wasn't, was Spider-Man. And yet, I felt like it was a pretty perfect blend of Tom Holland and the PS4 Spider-Man I'm always talking about.
Yeah.
It sounded like right in between there. I was really into his performance. So this was a fun episode for the voice acting.
You know, one thing I really like, too, to just kind of jump in, talking about Spider-Man, who was really at the heart of this episode. One, I liked seeing Spider-Man at the heart of something here in the MCU because, you know, normally when we're dealing with ensemble things, he's sort of tangential. And then the Spider-Man films themselves, which I love, have always been kind of ground level. So they're less at the center of things. So I think it feels very much like Marvel Comics to see Spider-Man at the forefront. And one thing I really liked this narrative that they went with of Peter kind of choosing optimism in the midst of all of these things and how powerful that is.
Yeah.
Well, right. I think that stuff gets me. But that's one of the reasons I'm such a Spider-Man fan and always have been. And I think that that's something that really shines in that character is that he's a character that in all these different mediums, whether you're talking about certain films or the comics or shows, he gets beat down and beat down and beat down. And it's sort of the thing that he always gets back up. I mean, that's a big part of the Spider-Man PS4 game. And I loved seeing him fill that role here so well. And in some ways kind of being the glue for this team of people that are all older and more experienced and in some cases more powerful. I thought that worked really, really well in this context.
That's what I meant when I said I thought of you. It's just that I know you think that's Spider-Man at his core. You've brought that up before. I very much enjoyed that. There's parts of the PS4 Spider-Man, like I've said many times before, and now there's parts of this specific Spider-Man that I kind of hope Tom Holland grows into in the MCU. I love Tom Holland, but there's character traits here that I think would be really fun to see, just like you're saying with the ensemble stuff and the core of him being so optimistic. I would love to see some of that.
For sure.
In the MCU. I want to start here. I mean, obviously, I wrote my first note as, okay, zombies, like gross, here we go. And I just thought this was actually really, really appropriate if you've seen Shang-Chi and you listened to our Thursday's episode last week. Well, I mean, one of the things I not complained about, but brought up was that Shang-Chi isn't very grotesque, violent, gross, etc. And I think if you haven't seen that movie, that's not spoiling anything for you.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, apparently Marvel is capable of it because even though this was animated, I feel like they went out of their way to show the opposite of that. Did you notice that? Like, I mean, you saw heads get eaten by ants. You saw Captain America cut in half with blood squirting out with a shield. You saw Ant-Man as just a head. I mean, you saw people eating people. Obviously, it was always going to be violent if it's about zombies, but I feel like they didn't shy away from it. So I got my wish, apparently.
It's true. I thought about you watching that because we had just recorded that Shang-Chi episode. There were a lot of things. And again, not even just the way that it looks, but I mean, the story ideas themselves are very dark. And I think in a lot of ways in keeping with the spirit of the comic that this is based on. But one question that I know was thrown around in the weeks leading up to this was, you know, what was going to be the moment? What was going to be the thing that led to the zombie virus? And there are I heard a lot of really interesting theories of moments all through the Infinity Saga where this could have happened. I really liked what they went with here.
Hank Pym screwed up another reality.
Man.
Stop it, Hank.
They're really dogging on Hank. I loved the shot of Hulk coming down and into the Sanctum Sanctorum and even the we get the same shot of New York that we get in Infinity War, and I love those little call outs.
Yep. And the actual Hulk not coming out, the exact same dialogue in a different spot. But yeah. And by the way, he says, oh, Tony, you guys are so screwed, which is what he actually yells for Thor in Infinity War.
Right.
Fun little Easter egg there.
Which I kind of love because I think it's this idea that like that's they've done that through different episodes, and it's like an expression that this person clearly would say because they end up using it later.
Yes. Even though this decision was different with Hank Pym, there's still certain aspects of characters that wouldn't have changed. Right. Like Bruce is still coming from Ragnarok and would not have known all this stuff. So it makes sense that there's certain things he would still say, even if it was a slightly different context.
Which, by the way, means that I think Thor should probably still be out there and not a zombie? Question mark.
Yeah, right. And the Guardians probably.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing. I really, we're talking about whether we would follow up. I think some of these would have some interesting follow-ups. I mean, I think the question would be, could you conclude it in a satisfying way and make it feel like you're not just kind of aimlessly exploring a new world? Like, it needs to be a compact story. But I would love to know what happens with zombie Thanos.
Yeah, and I think that could be a case-by-case basis for season two. Like, I don't need a follow-up on the Doctor Strange episode, personally, because it was such a beautifully sad story, and it's over. Like, that was the end of it.
Right.
His reality died.
Right.
But this is a perfect example of, in season two, they could pick up here and keep going. I don't... That's such a good point, because I don't think they need to have each separate reality interact. That's what I was saying earlier. But I'm not opposed to them coming back to this one if the story's not concluded.
Right. No, I think that's about where I am, too. I would way rather them kind of carefully wrap up or continue these individual stories than try to force some kind of multiversal meeting of all of the characters. I think I'm with you there.
Right.
I'm skipping ahead to the very end, and we're not even through the beginning yet.
Yeah, yeah. Did you catch the slight Avengers game, which I know you would like to bring up, parallel with the fighting on the Golden Gate Bridge?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, the first mission in the Avengers game is the very first scene, I think, right? Is you land on the Golden Gate Bridge in the Quinjet, and the main Avengers get off and fight through the bridge. And this looks almost exactly the same as that. I have no idea if they intentionally tried to do that, but I thought of you when I saw it.
I appreciate that, I think. Kyle and I have so many behind the scenes discussions about this game. That'll be the topic for another episode one day. Talking about that scene, well, a couple things before we say that. We talked about the Hank Pym thing. One thing I thought was interesting that we probably have folks out there that knew this. I had never seen it officially confirmed that Ant-Man and the Wasp took place 2 weeks prior to Infinity War. We knew that it was somewhere in that period, but I think in a lot of ways that further cements where that is in our watch order. You know, we have it right before Ragnarok because Ragnarok literally leads right into it. I think it makes
so
more
shout
sense
out
kind
you.
Of thematically. Hey, you know? But I liked seeing that because a lot of times people will put Ant-Man and the Wasp in between the two, like it came out in theater release order, and hopefully, you know, this disabuses everyone of that notion. But so I thought,
get rid of that garbage. Get it out of here. Get it out.
So I thought that was fun. But yeah, the scene where the Avengers show up made me think a lot of the Marvel Zombies comic. They make a lot of the fact that the reason the plague is able to spread so rapidly in the comics universe is because once it infects these superhuman people, they can then use their powers to infect huge numbers of people really quickly, especially like the mega powerful, like Wanda Maximoff type folks.
And remember that AC Bradley in our interview with her said that this specific episode was basically taken from the comics. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
This was the one that was not even just kind of a spinoff. There was a lot that was pulled directly from it.
Right. Which I felt like they did that. Like they did a great job of doing that while still in some ways adhering to obviously MCU continuity instead of the comic continuity. But also, they changed up a couple of things that I think I probably prefer Like probably the biggest difference between this and the comic is that in the comic, the zombies are all still like thinking, feeling people. Like they don't lose their minds or, you know, like their, or their personalities. It's just, they now have this kind of ravenous hunger for other people.
These were more like World War Z zombies.
Exactly. Which I think I kind of, I mean, it, in some ways, it obviously makes them less interesting because they don't have any kind of motivations other than just eating people. And in the comic, you have these scenes of, you know, Spider-Man, who's always dealing with guilt anyway, now dealing with the fact that he's, you know, murdering and eating the people that he's always been trying to protect. But the problem for me is that's, I think that's just a hair too dark for old Rob. And so I think
you crossed the line. So you messed up.
I think I like that at least, like, they, you know, it seems like that when they're zombified, they're kind of just creatures, and that the focus here is on the non-zombies. And I think that just makes it a little bit, like, it gives you a little bit of hope to cling to rather than just wallowing, like, in the depths of despair.
I always tell people that I'm not a zombie guy, but I'm reflecting on this and I'm like, wait, I loved World War Z. If you haven't seen World War Z, it's pretty
thrilling. World War Z is great. That movie is so underrated.
It's so great. Yeah, so underrated. Add that as an addition to Kyle's movie club talk. World War Z, I played The Last of Us 1 and 2, and I'm liking this, and I love Zombieland. So all of a sudden I'm like, wow, wait, am I a zombie guy? Like, what the heck? Like, what's happening? But then I bring up Zombieland last because did you get the Zombieland vibes right after that scene with Spider-Man doing the fake video? That's so Zombieland.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has to be a shout-out.
I mean, that's a straight shout-out.
Yeah.
Straight shout-out.
I
found that part incredibly enjoyable.
No, I agree. I mean, because it was so in character for this version of Spider-Man. I mean, it, going back to the way that we see him in Homecoming.
And also so funny. I mean, like, if you paused it and read the cards of each character, like Bucky, it says his skills are heavy sleeper.
Right.
Stuff like that. Happy.
I saw that.
Did you read Happy Shirt? I'm not really single. I'm just saving myself for Thor.
Yes, I saw that. I also liked that Sharon's part of her skill set was eulogies.
That's so good. I didn't catch that one. That's so good.
That was my
favorite.
There
was a couple of, this is a little out of order, but there was a couple of laugh out loud moments. That was funny. Some of the lines Paul Rudd had, and I can't wait to get into those. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to talk about those too, because I'm serious. I thought Paul Rudd was kind of next level in terms of his voice acting.
Yeah. He kind of felt separated from the other people. Is that crazy? It almost felt better. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. Like, as much as I love Mark Ruffalo, I think that there's kind of no contest in terms of who it felt kind of more natural with.
I think I agree. Okay, hold on. Let's get to that in a second when Paul Rudd comes up. But I loved that Zombieland shout out. And I did think it was very in character for this version of Spider-Man. I agree. I loved it. My first, like, concern for this, It's kind of a double-edged sword here, okay? On one hand, I felt like the story they were trying to tell was actually so interesting that if there ever was a what-if episode to this point that deserved a longer-running episode, like, this is a story they should have told, in my opinion, in, like, 50 minutes, like a two-parter.
I thought the same thing.
And so that's a positive because I thought the story was so interesting. There was so much to tell, but it felt kind of rushed at times because they were trying to jam it into 25 minutes. Did you feel that?
I did. Yeah. And I almost wish that they would just do some two-parters, you know, like if they're going to, like, lately Marvel actually has just started a new line of what if series on the comic side of things. And so instead of a single issue, it's like an arc. So you have like five issues. And I really like that model because it's the same idea, the same premise, but you actually are kind of getting, it gives the story beats time to breathe. And I saw a lot of people make that comment on this episode that I think it, it really could have benefited from that.
Yeah, on top of that, the editing itself was really fast-paced, like really fast. And I like fast-paced, but this entire episode could have just been them getting to Vision. That could have been one episode. And it could have ended with Hope having to do the heroic sacrifice just to get them there. That's 25 minutes right there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Then you could have done a whole nother episode of the twist with Vision and stuff. You know what I mean? So it just felt like it was maybe a little rushed.
No, that's a great point because, yeah, I mean, I think they did such a good job of letting you feel the relief of having Vision. Like, you're like, oh gosh, okay, Vision's so powerful, and it's like he's so wise. This is so great to have someone like this that
boom,
they
that
can
could
now
have been the cliffhanger.
Kind of, right.
Turn
right.
it off. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I think I'm totally with you there.
En route to Vision, though, in this first episode, in my opinion, there were some fun little Easter eggs that we got with this. Like, didn't you think it was kind of fun to see Bucky having to fight Sam?
Yeah. And Cap.
Like, exactly. Like, and Sharon. Like, there's just like, there was a fun little twist on that. Obviously, oh, we'll get there in a second, but then like the fun play on Wanda and Vision. Like, even in this universe, there was still kind of teams that allowed for Easter eggs that you wouldn't normally have.
Right.
So I thought like that, like seeing Falcon show up was pretty fun, like zombie Falcon.
Uh-huh.
And I just wrote down one line that I laughed out loud at when they're all fighting the zombies and it's going crazy. And Bruce yells, "Heck yeah, Cape." Did you catch that?
I did.
Heck yeah, Cape.
I
thought that was good.
No, that was great. You're right. This was a surprisingly funny one for how dark it also was.
Well, that's because when you do zombies, as I've learned as a zombie expert, self-proclaimed, you kind of have two routes, you know? Like, well, yeah, it's like in World War Z, it's not funny at all. There's no humor in that movie because it's obviously things are very bleak. And when things are that bleak, the only other way to approach it is to go like satirical, like the opposite side, ironic. Mm-hmm. That's what Zombieland is, which is like you're seeing the goriest zombies ever, but it's hilarious, you know, because there's nothing to do but laugh.
Right.
And I feel like this kind of had a mix of that a little bit.
No, I totally agree. And I also agree. I think the fun pairings here, like the fact that we had this little kind of band of not B-team Avengers, but obviously not the main group, you know, that's all kind of like, which is another interesting thing about this episode too. Like I thought that if this is happening, you know, right at the start of Infinity War, I thought it was interesting that the way this worked out differently, where the group was able to come together, you know, whereas like when Tony was going to call Cap, obviously everything happens and he never is able to make contact. But here, yeah, I mean, they team up with Black Panther, they head out there, and it was like, you know, so prior to that, I guess, there was an actual kind of reestablishing of the Avengers team, which was just an interesting element of this.
I love that you brought that up, because another parallel I caught, and this is not direct, but they kind of twisted it with a lot of the characters that ended up being dusted in Infinity War were the ones that were left here.
Yes.
Versus
That's
some of the zombies in this case were Iron Man, Cap, Clint. You know, it's not direct. It's not every one of them. But, like, it was kind of fun that it was the opposite of Infinity War, where now we got to see the other side of these characters.
Yeah. No, it's pretty close, though. You're right. Because, yeah, I mean, Spider-Man gets dusted. He's there. I think, by and large, That's
Black Panther gets dusted. He's there.
Yeah.
Which we got to say again, Chadwick. I mean,
man,
what a crazy reveal that he's still in this. I at this point, it doesn't make me as sad. I'm just so thankful. And it's kind of fun that they had all this recorded. So that's really cool. That was cool. The still like we're getting to live on with Black Panther a little bit longer. Which is, I guess I'm just saying it is sad, but I'm viewing it as a gift.
No, know? For sure, which I think it definitely is. And I felt that what was really cool about his performance here is how distinguishable it is from his performance in episode 2. Did you notice that? Like, he was playing here, like, classic T'Challa in the way that he delivers these lines, whereas I felt like in his Star-Lord episode, there was a lot more levity. It was a lot more of kind of his character mixed with Peter Quill, I think kind of intentionally. And I thought that it was cool and impressive to see how just through voice acting, through using the same accent, the same voice, he was able to have a little subtle difference there.
Hmm. I didn't notice that, but I think I would agree with that. Yeah. It has been fun to kind of track who seems to set themselves apart a little bit with this voice acting stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, did you notice again that, like, Bucky wasn't the strongest one? Am I crazy? Because I feel like Bucky was, again, not the strongest one when you compare it to Chadwick or Paul Rudd, for example, or even Vision, I thought.
Yeah, no, that's fair. He wasn't the strongest. I did
same
think
with Ruffalo,
was,
not as strong.
Yeah, I actually, I felt a little bit better about Bucky here than Bruce. I think.
Sure, I think so too. Yep.
You know, I think what's interesting, we talked about this some a couple episodes ago, but I'm realizing some of these actors, I think, are not. There are two ways I think they can go wrong here. Not to be hypercritical, but I'm noticing, and they're both kind of subtle, and none of them in any way kind of ruined the performances.
Right, it was all still good. Yep.
Right. But I think on the one hand, as people have pointed out, because you don't have the physical acting to rely on as well, like the face acting and everything else that goes with it, you have to put a lot of that emotion into the voice to be an effective voice actor. And I think some of these folks maybe aren't comfortable enough with that to do it, so the performances seem to kind of fall flat. On the other hand, I feel like some of these actors know that and are compensating, and it feels like they're overacting in a way that doesn't match up with the animation. Do you know what I'm saying?
I love that as we're going through this process, you and I are kind of getting to the bottom of all this, because we didn't know this. This is not a fact we know.
Right.
But as we're watching it, we're formulating a little bit of opinion here. And I agree with that, I think. It's if you're getting in trouble, it's one of those two things. That's probably fair. Yeah.
And I think to your point, yeah, it's so Chadwick and Paul Rudd for sure out of this episode.
And the Spider-Man
and Paul
guy.
Bettany. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
And Paul Bettany.
But yeah, in terms of the MCU actors coming over, I mean, but yeah, I think you're right. Paul Bettany should go in there as well, because I thought he did a fantastic job, which makes sense, you know, because I mean, that's how Paul started his MCU career.
Right. Yeah, true. Jarvis. Also, I should also add, I think Evangeline Lilly did great.
Yeah.
Like Evangeline Lilly for me was one of those that almost was better as a voice actor. Is that crazy?
I don't know why I'm saying this, but I felt the same thing there. And I don't mean that
weird.
As some kind of slight against her performance.
No.
But in the anime movies, I mean. But yeah, no, I was like, wow, she's really, like,
yes.
To the point where I was like, is this a voice actor because of how good it was? Like, is it just someone doing
yes.
a great Evangeline Lilly impersonation? Yeah. Wow,
like, in a weird way, I don't feel a ton of stuff from her character in her movies, but I slightly got moved with this sacrificial death she had
mm-hmm.
from her voice acting, which is backwards from everything we just said. So yeah, crazy.
I also thought that I've liked that between this and the episode 3 version of Hope that we only kind of hear about in retrospect, because she's gone by the time we learn that she was ever a SHIELD agent. I like that she's kind of a more empowered character. Like I think here especially, we see her just like clean up. I mean, she comes in and takes out all the Avengers zombies.
And she takes out Ebony Maw.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like at the moment when you're like, you don't know how they're going to get out of this, I think it's kind of fun that she is the one that kind of very believably and in very cool ways throughout the episode is just like kicking names and taking ass.
Yeah. I got the reference. I'm here with you. I'm here with you.
Just making sure you're still awake.
We got to keep moving here because I want to get to the back half. For you music sleuths out there, did you catch what we had talked about with Laura? It was kind of fun to hear those themes. You heard the Avengers theme. Bum, 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 bum. And then there was a little Ant-Man theme in there. Bum, 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 bum. I think that's all it does, that much. But just kind of fun.
But you know the one that I thought about you the most when I heard. It's the back half, so I don't know if we want to get there yet.
Hold on. Are you about to talk about my girl?
Okay, of course.
We're not there yet.
Okay,
we're
okay.
Not there
we'll
yet.
Hold off.
All I was going to say is also kind of a fun shout out to the wasp expanding through a zombie and exploding it.
Yeah.
So again, we now know that that was a viable way to blow up a human, just probably not Thanos. But yeah. We got to see her explode Sharon. I got Sharon all over me. Which, by the way, I want to add there with that line in particular, there was a couple lines from her and Okoye where they were like such calloused jokes to how awful the situation would be in real life that I think if you were wanting this to be super dark and not lean into the zombie landness of it, I could see how you'd be disappointed with a few certain lines, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like when
I
they
see
say
that.
Like, that was your friend, sorry. And then Bucky says like, well, I'd normally be mad, but whatever. Like, they're trying to be funny, and I could see how some people would maybe want them to embrace more of the sadness there. Mm-hmm. So then I think if with some of the Zombieland tones they set up, there was times where they tried to all of a sudden be serious, and I'm not sure it was as effective because it had been so jokey, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the line, like, I got Sharon all over me. Like, is nobody bummed that we just lost Sharon? I mean, Sharon means nothing to anybody, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Again, I don't care about that because it's a fun side story standalone. That's
right.
What I like. If you're carrying over large ramifications, then you'd probably be like, well, Bucky would care about that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think they would probably say that they're sad when Sharon is infected and taken. And then they sort of have like very quickly processed that to where now when they have to kill zombie Sharon, they don't care anymore. What I think is kind of interesting about that, and it is always sort of interesting in certain, depending on the zombie genre you're dealing with, is this is one though where they're talking about a cure. And so I'm always like, if you're talking about like Spider-Man says, you know, what if we're minutes away from a cure? I have to think, like, don't you want to try to take every effort to maybe,
effort.
Like, just imprison this person, you know, and then try
instead
to...
Instead of blowing them up.
Right? Like, what if in, like, an hour, you know, they could have saved Sharon, and instead they just blew her up because, like, hey, like, I guess that's one way to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And, like, Cap, he was on the train. He got
right.
cut in half. He didn't make it. He could have waited a little bit longer and
right.
maybe could have had a shot, but okay. Two other tiny notes, okay? An Uncle Ben reference in the MCU.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
And I thought the Spider-Man guy in general was great. So it was fun to hear him mention Uncle Ben in that. And he even mentions May in the past tense. So
can I get something on the record real quick that I've been meaning to, but I don't think I have yet?
Absolutely, I love it.
This is a Spider-Man No Way Home tidbit, but I think it fits in here because of the Uncle Ben-ness
okay.
of it all. I have this. I've nursed this secret hope over the past several years that someone on the Spider-Man Homecoming or Civil War team. Back in, you know, 2015, whenever they were filming this, or 2014, however long ago it was, had the thought and or the forethought, I should say, to film an Uncle Ben scene with young Tom Holland, so that if they wanted to give us like a little mini prologue or some sort of flashback, to the degree that is going to play into the No Way Home story, like just because if he does end up interacting with these other Spider-Men that have their own Uncle Ben stories, I've had this kind of hope that is just sitting somewhere on the shelf in case they ever wanted to give us that origin story, even though they knew that at the time we definitely didn't need it. And I'm saying, this is not me saying, oh, I'm mad if we never get an Uncle Ben scene, but I am just saying if we do get an Uncle Ben scene, I think it would be really cool if they just had it shot the whole time. That's what I'm going on record saying. Just in case that ever shows up, I want it to be known that it's been a thing in the back of my mind here.
You Spider-Man fans and your hang-ups. I mean, wow. Like, Spider-Man fans are crazy, Robbie. Do you realize that at least? Like, come on.
I mean, not it's as like crazy a Star Wars, Star fan Wars level. Fans.
No, oh! It's on a similar level. If you go onto our Twitter and read all the Spider-Man stuff, are you kidding me? People are passionate about it. For me, not having the preconceived notions, I'm okay with it not being the Uncle Ben thing because I like that Tony filled that void. Like, I don't need Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
I understand how it's a really important thing to the original Spider-Man's character. I get that. But this is a different thing, and I like how it's tied to Tony.
No, I'm with you, and I don't want you to hear me saying that I really like the way that they've tied it to Tony as well. I think that they are already implying that there is an Uncle Ben story. I mean, we've heard Peter talk about, like, you know, with what happened with my aunt.
Yeah, for sure.
Or sorry, with what happened with my uncle, you know, May really doesn't need this right now. We saw the briefcase in Far From Home or the suitcase. So, like...
Yeah, true.
It is in-universe. I think they're just... They are either going to just let it be something that's unsaid because it's been said so many times in every other Spider-Man medium. I'm with you in that I think they've done a really good job of utilizing the Tony character. But I also thought that like the scene you're referring to, was kind of a good example of how you can have both and, because he's rattling off the people he's lost, his parents, his Uncle Ben, now Mr. Stark, and you're seeing how it creates a through line of the stuff that he's had to overcome. And I think that for me, the reason I don't think that adding Ben in would take away from the Tony relationship is because I think in some ways the loss of a father figure in Uncle Ben makes the Tony Stark relationship even more meaningful, and the loss of Tony hurt even more because now that's, and you know, three father figures that he's lost and two that he was really close to. And then, and finally, I think the reason the Uncle Ben thing is important to some people is because the loss of Tony is a loss, but it's not a loss that is Peter's fault. And I think that's something that people take as the hang-up is, and I'm not one of them because I think it's implied, and that's that whole Civil War conversation we get. But I think people would push back and say it's not that Tony Stark being in the MCU and having that relationship with Peter is the problem. It's that Tony is lost because of this kind of heroic act that has nothing to do with Peter at the end of Endgame. Whereas Uncle Ben was lost because Peter failed to act and was too concerned with himself to care about anyone else, and that wound up hurting him the most. And so I think there is a difference there, but rant
over.
Holy
cow. I get it. I love Uncle Ben too. I just know how to get you riled up at this point. I mean, all I need to say is accuse Spider-Man of something or bring up Uncle Ben and it triggers a Robbie rant. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's
I understand.
Like
I understand everything you said about Uncle Ben. And I guess I'll close that argument by saying, holy crap, we're going to get into some stuff later down the road when we have more time to talk about Spider-Man and the old movies. Like I said, I have some takes. You have some takes. It might be the most contentious we've ever had on this podcast.
It might be.
And I can't wait, honestly.
It might be. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll get there.
For those of you that saw this episode or are listening to this conversation and are wanting some more Spider-Man, we've got some stuff in the works for you. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge year for us. By the way, I'm just going to share this too. Robbie and I legit just got heated yelling at each other for 5 minutes that I was thinking is not on the podcast about Uncle Ben and Spider-Man, and I was going to cut it out, and we're not using it, and you were thinking it was. And so that's the background. Like, that's behind the scenes. Like, it's coming. It's coming in there. So
there's
just hang
brewing.
Tight. We're going to get there. This is just not the time to talk about Spider-Man that intensely, because we both think this guy did such a
good
job.
It's always the time. It's always the time to talk about Spider-Man.
Can we talk about my guys, though? Let's talk about my guys.
All right,
Vision and freaking Wanda.
Come on.
Are you kidding me? First of all, I think add Vision and Wanda to the list of, like, not surprise cameos, but like the big bombshell character, right? When they showed up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That it's actually Vision there. I can't remember if Paul Bettany's in the intro credits. Can you? Mm-mm. But either way, it was a Thanos level of reveal for me that it was Vision.
Yeah.
And it just, I can't help it. My heart gets so warmed when I hear his voice and I see Wanda, even though it's zombie Wanda. What's amazing is that reveal, I don't think could have been any better.
No, I agree.
The line that Vision has of, "You have awakened her and she hasn't eaten in days," was absolutely terrifying, right. I thought. And like the perfect character for that to be the case. So fitting and terrifying. And that's what gets me so pumped about Wanda in the MCU as well. Not that she's a zombie, but just that level of like, oh crap, you've awakened Wanda.
Yeah.
I love that.
No, I'm totally with you. I was like, what can anyone do? Like, if you have.
Right. Like Bucky shooting at her. I'm like, you're so dumb. Right. She's just going to crush you.
That was so great. And what you talked about earlier in terms of the kind of slight inversions or subversions of things that we've seen in the MCU, I thought that the fact that we still got these moments from Infinity War reimagined.
Yes. Oh.
You know what I mean? Like with
pulling out the stone?
Pulling out the stone.
Are you kidding me?
Wanda like leaning over his body with the stone pulled out is almost the exact same image from the end of Infinity War, except yep. Now she's a zombie.
Yep. Like, I really hope for Wanda going forward in the MCU. I love that we're using this What If episode to transition into all the other live action timeline stuff. But I hope that with Wanda, again, we got to talk about Spider-Man soon. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't get off my mind. Stop. I hope that Wanda going forward is like a 10 million times better version of Dark Phoenix. I've said that. That's kind of the vibe I hope.
Yeah.
Almost like multiple personalities. Not that, but like if she gets triggered in the wrong way, it's power that we can't contain. And this was kind of fun to see the zombie version of that.
Yeah. Well, and what I was alluding to earlier, to get a little bit of that Christoph Beck Wanda theme. Did you hear it?
How did I miss this?
Oh,
no,
you missed
how
it?
Did I miss this?
Oh, man,
oh,
Kyle.
No.
You've got to go back and watch it.
What part of it? Da-na.
It's as she's, like, I think it's when she's outside and she's up in the air, and maybe it's when she's fighting Bucky.
Like Ascendant?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll go back and double check to make sure I'm not crazy, but I remember hearing it and I'm surprised. But the fact that you didn't hear it makes me think maybe I am crazy, but.
That's because Christoph Beck's the GOAT. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't there.
Man, I just thought that was really cool because we're seeing a pre-Wanda Vision Wanda, but having that theme there whenever she's kind of gone, you know, full beast mode. Was really fun.
It was just so well done there. I'm not going to lie to you. After all the discussion recently you and I have had about Hulk and how we're so content with Hulk staying Professor Hulk because he's had an incredible storyline, there's always this weird part of me that's like really geeks out about him hulking out.
Yeah.
So like to see Hulk clash with Wanda.
I was about to say
like
the same thing.
Like a clash of the Titans.
Yes.
Was actually still really cool. And it just kind of always reminds me, same with seeing Vision. It just reminds me that I'm split down the middle on this stuff, right? Like seeing Vision again brought so much warmth to my heart that it makes me go like, I want to see Vision. I want to see Vision like shooting people with his stone and just like dominating and being the Vision I know. And I miss that so badly. And the other part of me is like, but I don't want him to come back because Wanda is so affected by his loss. If you bring him back, does that, you know? So it's like,
right.
I don't even know how to give a take on that. Same thing with Hulk. It's like his storyline on paper is perfect. I don't need to see him Hulk out. But then I see him Hulk out. I'm like, that's kind of dope.
Right.
It's kind of cool. It's kind of cool.
Especially in so this kind of like last stand way, you know? So epic.
Right. I'm kind of like cheating on myself, basically. I'm a hypocrite. It's like, I don't know what I want with those characters, you know? And I'm nervous, Robbie. This is a deep, deep, dark confession, okay? Ready? I'm nervous. As passionate as I am about Cap and Tony's storyline being over, I'm nervous that there would still be a part of me that would still give in to those fanboy urges. Like, if they did bring Tony back, there'd still be a part of me that'd be like, oh, yeah, let's go. You know, and like that's not good because his story's perfect and he can't come back. But you know what I mean? It's still in there. I can't help it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that would, yeah. No, I'm totally with you. Because there are worlds where they could show up even just as cameos, again, like in a Secret Wars thing.
And yeah, I think it shouldn't.
I think I still wouldn't want it, but part of me would be so excited.
Think about the chills you would get if Cap showed up, like with his beard and the shield out of the darkness again.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, this is not good, but I love it so much. Right.
I think the, man, I know, this is, we had such similar thoughts going through our heads, yeah. I think, through this entire episode. But the other thing from this back half, just as we wrap up, that I thought was really fun was the role that T'Challa plays here is also ripped straight from the pages of the Marvel Zombies comic, where in the comic you have Hank Pym, who in that timeline is functioning as Ant-Man, and he has abducted T'Challa and is basically using him as sustenance while he'll go work in the lab. And he is, it's very similar because he's working on a cure, but he's like, well, I can't think clearly unless I am able to kind of satiate this hunger. So he's like,
ugh.
He's cutting off bits. It's very dark, but that's why gross. You see there, like T'Challa's like missing a leg and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm here for snack time or whatever it is he says, because Vision's been using T'Challa to keep Wanda, I guess, not alive, but at bay. Yeah, like, very
in a good mood.
yeah, I guess. Yeah, but very dark. But again, yeah, I mean, very, very much straight from the Kirkman comic. So I thought that was just a fun, because I remember wondering whenever I saw Black Panther in that first opening scene, whether he was done, you know, because it makes it look as though all the Avengers are taken out there. And so I had kind of just assumed that Okoye was going to find him and he was going to be a zombie or something. So it was really nice to have an excuse to hear from Chadwick again. But also just, Black Panther is also one of those characters to me, like Vision, where he's just always so, he's always kind of got the situation under control. Like he has such a commanding presence.
Yes.
That whenever he's like back in the group, I'm like, okay, like I feel way better about the situation in general now that T'Challa's here.
Yeah. Which is awful that, again, we don't have Vision or T'Challa anymore. So
man,
that's
I know.
A bummer. The Vision Wanda T'Challa twist in general, as someone who's never read the comics, was shocking and incredible.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, okay, Vision has gone bad, gone rogue. But again, to bring it back that he's gone rogue out of his love
right.
for Wanda. The only other thing I got to talk about before we wrap up is just, I wish I had written down some of Paul Rudd's dad joke lines. It was unbelievable to have a head in a glass jar.
Futurama
with
style.
A cape making jokes and, again, killing it with his acting performance. But, like, he works in a Harry Potter quote, Wingardium Leviosa, as he's flying away. His dad jokes and, like, look out, she's a man-eater. Sorry. I'm doing it with the dad jokes. It was so funny to me. I get it. It's totally slapsticky and like out there.
No, I'm with you though.
I really
loved it.
Enjoyed it.
I loved it. And part of it, I mean, again, was his delivery was just so great. And one thing that I thought was well done is this, like I knew he's in there giving the jokes and he isn't at that point aware of what's just happened with Hope. And so I kept kind of waiting for the moment when he had to confront that. And I liked that they snuck that in at the end.
And they still gave him a serious note.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Same thing with Hank. He was like, oh, Hank. That's
true.
Where he was good is like they still had a couple serious lines. Yep. Loved it. He says like, you guys can go ahead and high five. I won't be offended. It's okay. And like when he's like, oh, I forgot. Oh, you're one of the Avengers. Remember Spider-Man says that?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I totally was. Like, I was in the Avengers, like, big part of
like, he's like, I mean, not officially, but yeah, you know.
But yeah, yeah. Okay, we're all part of this team. It's just, yeah, it was really fantastic. And I love, last thing on his note, that his character had like self-awareness about his MCU character, right?
Right?
Where he's like, I'm sorry, I just make jokes when I'm uncomfortable or nervous. And so,
right.
Regarding ranking the episodes, we're not really doing that. This is unofficial and kind of off the record, but I think I would go Doctor Strange is my first one, episode 4. Then I think I'd say episode 2, then this one, then 3, then 1. That's probably my just off the cuff order. And it just, I bring that up because a lot of people are talking about that in our Slack. And it almost makes me wonder, Robbie, if our rankings would be more effective if we separated the Disney Plus shows from the movies. I'm starting to go down that rabbit hole a little bit because it's getting really, really hard to say, like, even like this What If season, how does that fit compared to Spider-Man Homecoming? It's really difficult to say. Like, I know we always say that, but this is getting like,
right.
You know, when we get to the end of What If, to rank it amongst the other MCU content's getting really strange. I think I'm going to do it as of now, but I just wonder if separating those shows out would be easier. Cause I think I could do that.
I could very much get on board with that. Cause it is a different medium. Like the pacing's so different. It's just, I don't know that it's entirely fair to either to pit a show like WandaVision against a movie like Civil War, like we've talked about. Like they're just, not just that they're doing different things genre-wise, but like the entire execution is just fundamentally different.
Right, and plus it'd be kind of fun to be like, WandaVision's the number one show on Disney Plus, right? Like it's just, it raises the stakes of what they've done with their shows or whatever. Let's think about that. You know what? What does our audience think of that? Do you think it'd be more fun to hear us separate the Disney Plus rankings out from the movies or just keep it as one thing? Maybe we do both, Robbie. I don't know.
Yeah.
But let us know what you guys think. What do you think about that? What do you think about this episode? Tell us on social media at the FFW Podcast or on our Slack, as we've talked about. And like I've said a lot already, the FFWpodcast.com is becoming a bigger deal for us. I added the videos on there. You can buy our shirt on there, which I still have a few. So I'd love to ship those to you. You can donate to the podcast there, but we're working on more stuff. I know we keep saying that. We're going to reveal it soon and the website will be a part of that. And just, I'm so excited about some of the things coming up. Robbie, I can't now stop thinking about this Uncle Ben discussion. We probably should argue about it a little more. We got to find a space for that too, okay?
We
got to find a space to recreate that passion because I was yelling at you. I need to recreate that passion.
I really thought we'll were recording that.
Yeah, I wasn't even by the mic. My bad. That's my bad. We'll get to that. Well, I'll recreate that passion, and I can't wait to talk about some of the Spider-Man stuff coming up. So just know from Robbie and I that, A, we're so thankful for all of you and where we've been, but we are freaking pumped about where we're going and what's about to happen. So
yes,
stay with us. And thank you so much, guys, for making us a part of your day. Seriously, like wherever you're at, however you're listening to this, we appreciate it so much. So as always, we'll see you next week on Friends from Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance, like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.